We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by the Blue Wire Sports Podcasting Network. Today's episode is also presented by BetOnline.ag and new sponsor Deal Dash. Stay tuned for the ads for a promo code for Deal Dash. We have reached the end of July, which means it is time for a non-sports movie episode, now picked by the Big Screen Sports Facebook group every month. And this month is My Cousin Vinny. It's back-to-back months with a perfect movie as a non-sports pick. Last month, as you'll remember, it was Swingers. My Cousin Vinny is just, it's just the damn best, folks. And today we got a great guest, my buddy Dave Ruff, returning to Big Screen Sports. Dave is part of the group over at Wash Media, putting out great podcasts. He's been great on this podcast, did Mighty Ducks, did Miracle, and he is actually a real-life lawyer. Got an expert in for this one. Perfect guest. So everyone, you know, go check out Dave's stuff if you haven't yet. Hope everyone enjoys this episode, us talking My Cousin Vinny. Movie both of us love, really enjoyed it. I want to shout out another 5-star listener review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you, L_Benio, for saying to hang this pod from the rafters. I appreciate that. Appreciate all the 5-star ratings and reviews of late. Y'all have been kicking ass with that. I really appreciate it. If you haven't yet, head over to Apple Podcasts. You know, 5-star rating and review, those help soothe my very fragile ego, help boost this podcast. You guys know the drill. Also, go join the Big Screen Sports Facebook group to pick future non-sports movie episodes. Still have an active poll up in the group about next month, but it looks like Eurotrip is gonna pull ahead and win that one, which I'm pretty excited for. And then follow the pod on Twitter at @big_screensport or my personal Twitter @KyleBandujo for future episode info, sports movie content. You know the drill. Next week, we're talking to best-selling author and baseball writer Ryan Spader about why he hates baseball movies. It's kind of a rapid fire. We talk about pretty much every relevant baseball movie you can think of. Fun episode, but for now, let's talk My Cousin Vinny with Dave Ruff. All right, joining me for today's episode of Big Screen Sports, he is the co-host of Circling Back from Wash Media, returning to Big Screen Sports. It's Dave Ruff, Crime Dog. How you doing, man?
Hadn't heard that name in years.
Not Crime since the dog. PGP days.
Man, how are you, young Kyle?
I'm excellent. I'm very happy to have you back on the pod. You've been on for Miracle. You've been on for Mighty Ducks. We go way back to the website Postgrad Problems, RIP. But before we get into today's episode, our non-sports movie of the month, Dave, what's going on at Wash Media? You guys have recently dropped a new podcast, and you also have Circling Back going with something pretty movie related. What have you guys been up to?
Well, thank you for asking, Kyle. Actually, we just, so over at Washed, we've got a few podcasts. Circling Back is the one that I helped start with Will DeFries and Dylan Chivery. And we've also got So Many Screens with J.R. Hickey and Kate, I believe it's pronounced Patinod. At least that's how I've been saying it behind her back.
And it is basically I do the same. That's how I pronounce it as well.
Good. It's a pop culture podcast that if it's on a screen, they talk about it. You know, they get into the weeds on stuff. It's really good. Check it out. Geez, what else is going on? We got a sports one launching soon that we haven't named because I just get super neurotic when it comes to naming podcasts. So it's my fault. But look for that at the end of the month. And
you guys have been doing a stream room calling it the stream room on your Patreon, talking movies.
Yeah, so we're just doing. We have a Patreon tier that's optimized. We drop a podcast on there Tuesdays, and we just kind of pick a movie. It can be any genre. It's generally a 90s movie, nostalgia, but we're kind of mixing it up. Like we just did. What did we do today, Kyle? I can't even.
Remember. You did Jerry Maguire, and when you say Jerry Maguire. Is today that we are recording this, not the day this episode is coming out. So about two weeks ago, Dave, you did Jerry Maguire, and it was a wonderful listen. It was lovely.
Did you listen? I really enjoyed that movie. Had you seen?
Yeah, no. Yeah, we actually. If I'm going to do a self plug, did that during Oscar month in February with Julie DeCaro, now from Reincarnated Deadspin. It's wonderful. The shocking thing was that your co-host Will DeFries had never seen it because he is the most Jerry Maguire. Like that movie is put on a tee for him.
He's the rom-commiest of the three of us,
without a doubt.
But yeah, I was gonna ask you if you had done that movie because I guess I was like, well, oh yeah, there's a sports tie-in. Not that you're sticking to sports, which I appreciate, but. Yeah, we got, it was a good movie. I've seen it many times, and it holds up. So, yeah, we have fun over there. Check it out if you're interested. If you think I bring the juice tonight, check us out at Circling Back Podcast and Washed Media.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously a big fan of what you guys do. Rooting for you guys very hard. But, Dave, you are a great guest for this podcast, our non-sports movie of the month, because not only are you a great podcaster, a great fan of movies, but you're a man of the law. You are an actual real life lawyer. And today we are doing My Cousin Vinny.
A funny thing happened to William and Stanley on their way to college.
At what point did you shoot the clerk?
They got framed for murder.
Whoa! Wait a minute!
Now, two kids from New York are in deep trouble.
It's time to make your phone calls.
The clan's here. They're in bed. They sleep with their sisters.
In the deep South.
Some of them do.
And only one man can save them.
We need to call an attorney, a great attorney.
He's not your typical hero.
We got an attorney in the family.
Great, who?
He's...
My cousin Vinny.
The 1992 comedy. When sweet Northern college kids Bill and his buddy Stan are picked up and thrown into the slammer in a hick southern town, at first it looks like no big deal. Then they are informed that they are accused of murder. Penniless and without a single friend in the area, Bill decides to call his goofy cousin Vinny, who has somehow recently become a lawyer. It starred Joe Pesci, Ralph Macchio, Fred Gwynn, and featured an Oscar-winning performance from Marissa Tomei. It's directed by Jonathan Lynn, who also has a law degree. We'll get into that. It was written by Dale Lawner, got an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, gross $64 million. It is one of my favorite movies. It is when it is on cable. I always turn it on. Dave, right off the bat for you, is this a Hall of Fame, All-Star, Starter, or Bench Warmer movie?
It's Hall of Fame for me. This is HOF all the way, first ballot. I grew up watching this movie. Probably had something to do with me pursuing the legal career. And on that note, Kyle, I prefer Esquire, not lawyer. Thanks.
DC Ruff Esquire.
Yeah, or ESQ for short if you want. Whatever's easiest for you. It's your podcast. But yeah, dude, I love this movie. So it is Hall of Fame, no doubt.
And it is apparently something we'll get into with the IMDb stuff. It is apparently very, very well respected by the law community. Also just very respected by the film watching community. This one is, yeah, it's a Hall of Famer. It is... Like I said, anytime it's on cable, whenever it gets a run, I always turn it on. There's a bunch of scenes that I'm always waiting for. It is, besides the great scene that we're going to talk about that everyone has to wait for at the end of the movie, you don't think as much of like great scenes as you do great bits, great recurring gags. Vinny and Mona Lisa adjusting to life in the South with the food, Vinny learning how to be a lawyer on the fly. You know, it is just, this movie is perfect. Much like last month's non-sports movie, Swingers, is, in my opinion, perfect. This is a perfect movie. And it catches Joe Pesci at a really, like, just on a hell of a run. In a three-year run, he does Goodfellas, which he wins an Oscar for, Home Alone, JFK, where he's really going for it in JFK, and this movie in a three-year run. What is your, Dave, for you, what's your favorite Pesci performance? Because after this, it's kind of like middling stuff. He does Home Alone 2. He retires from acting at a certain point. He was great in The Irishman. I don't know if you did the 3-hour watch recently when that dropped on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, I did.
He's my favorite part of The Irishman. But, he's also in Casino. I can't forget Casino. What is your favorite Pesci?
Man, when I saw this question on the rundown, I really had to think about it. There's so much great Pesci. I love that he retired and basically just hung out at a country club for like 20 years and then did The Irishman, because that's all he does, I think, is play golf.
Which sounds awesome.
It sounds great. Shout out to him. I'm following in his footsteps, maybe. We'll see. But my favorite Pesci movie, this is controversial, I love Pesci in Casino.
Pesci in Casino is excellent.
He's great in Goodfellas. And you know what? He's just as good in Goodfellas. I just, for some reason, maybe it's because I've seen Goodfellas so many times, I kind of prefer Casino. But I really like his performance in that. He's just like a next level scumbag. Just like much more than your run-of-the-mill psychopath like he is in Goodfellas. But he was great in The Irishman. I think you just said he was the best part of that movie, and I completely agree.
Yeah, I really thought that he would have, like, when I saw The Irishman, I thought that he would get that kind of run for best supporting actor. You know, they always give it to an old guy. I feel like if he hadn't won for Goodfellas, like back in the day, like if Joe Pesci was still hanging out Oscarless, they would have given him a more of a look, more of a chance to take home that Oscar for The Irishman. One of my favorite Pesci performances, and I say this in jest because I just heard about it this when we were when I was researching this movie. Did you know that he released an album called Vincent LaGuardia Gambini Sings Just for You?
I knew a little bit about this. I have not dabbled though. Did you give it a listen?
You know what? Honestly, no. The first song on the first song on the album is called Yo Cousin Vinny. The second one is called Wise Guy. The third one is called Take Your Love and Shove It.
Oh, that's a nod to Take This Job and Shove It. Love
yeah.
It.
Yeah. I mean, Pesci has history with Jersey Boys, with the Jersey Boys. Like he's featured in that musical and with that group. So with Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. So he's got the chops, but he's great. I truly don't know my favorite Pesci. It's hard to pick. Like I'm gonna say it's this. I most recently watched My Cousin Vinny, so I'm like leaning My Cousin Vinny. He's perfect in My Cousin Vinny. We're gonna get into the IMDb trivia right now. There's a couple casting things that make me more think that this is Pesci's best performance, because a lot of times when you get like casting trivia, you think that someone, you know, you hear a name and it's like, oh, this movie could be just as good with that person, or, you know, close to as good, and it's just not even close. But as far as the IMDb trivia, director Jonathan Lynn actually has a law degree, insisted the film's legal proceedings be realistic. In fact, many attorneys and law professors praised the film for its accurate depiction of trial strategy and courtroom procedure, especially with regards to presenting expert witnesses at trial. Dave, did any professor reference this movie in law school ever?
Yes, I believe in my legal ethics course that they make you take, I believe it was referenced. They did it, you know, that class is kind of a blow-off class as far as law school goes. So they'll bring up some clips or kind of, you know, name some movies and be like, hey, remember this? Like, you know, was this ethical situation? They'll just kind of bring in some pop culture references. But I think everybody in the legal community, like you said, thinks pretty fondly of this movie.
Yeah, I had a listener reach out, and I am a bad host because I did not write down their name, but they said that They had a law professor who actually wrote a paper on Vinny, on like things you can learn from Vinny. The American Bar Association's publication, the ABA Journal, which I assume, Dave, you read weekly or monthly whenever it comes out. I assume that's big for you.
I actually do their podcast.
It ranked the film number 3 on its list of the 25 greatest legal movies. Like, you think of law as like such a, no offense, Dave, like a very stuffy profession in the
because
sense
it
like
is.
Yeah, an intense profession. And like a movie called My Cousin Vinny is number 3 on 25 greatest legal movies.
What do you remember what number 1 was? I'm curious.
I don't. I'm wondering. So it was only on, the only thing on the trivia was just that it is number 3. Let's do a Google real quick.
Yeah, sorry. I was just, you got me wondering. Because like this one is, it does such a great job of depicting like a small town courtroom. I used to practice in a small town, or actually I shouldn't say I practiced. Yeah, I guess I kind of did. I interned in Kaufman, Texas, and that's a little town outside of Dallas, but very small. And then I practiced in Waxahachie, home of the Indians. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but very, very good, you know, very big on procedure. And they definitely know when someone's an outsider, and they're very skeptical. And that's all real.
So the number 1 greatest legal movie, according to the American Bar Association, is To Kill a Mockingbird, which came out in 1962. I've never seen To Kill a Mockingbird, actually. I have seen the number 2 film on the list. It is 12 Angry Men, which, even though it came out in 1957, is in full black and white, starred Henry Fonda, it is still very, very good.
Those are two iconics. That does not shock me.
Yeah, I would highly recommend anyone check out 12 Angry Men. I can definitely recommend that one. Moving on with the IMDb trivia, the misunderstanding between Vincent Gambini and Judge Holler regarding the two Utes was in fact a real conversation between Joe Pesci and director Jonathan Lynn. Lynn, who is British, at first had a hard time understanding Pesci's pronounced New Jersey accent. It is very fun to read trivia like that, where it is something that makes it's like a random thing that makes its way into the film, and then it's an iconic part of the film.
So would you say you got a better shot at him going in and not so much coming out?
You could say that.
I did say that. Would you say that?
Yeah.
Is it possible the two Utes...
Two what? What was that word?
What word?
To what?
What?
Did you say Utes?
Yeah, two Utes.
What is a Ute?
Oh, excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
That is oft quoted. Many people, my dad included, love quoting that line. And I can't, if I ever see that word, I think of it and I will probably say Utes.
I will be doing a bad impression of that here in 5 to 10 minutes. So stay tuned for that. On the Dan Le Batard radio show, here's some acting stuff, some potential other noms. Actor Jim Belushi admitted that he regretted that he turned down the title role in this film. Dave, I pose this question to you. How much worse is this film if Jim Belushi is playing Vinny?
I honestly don't believe that's real. That's shocking that he was even offered this role. This role is so perfect for Joe Pesci. He's just got the little man syndrome, just tough guy. Jim Belushi, it's a different movie. And they couldn't, I can't picture him with Marissa Tomei. No way.
Yeah, I really wonder if that's something where Belushi's just kind of shooting the shit and been like, man, no one's going to call me on this. Two other guys considered for the role of Vincent Gambini, Danny DeVito and John Lovitz. I love John Lovitz. I don't know. I mean, I don't think this movie is as good as it is with anyone except Joe Pesci, especially because of what Joe Pesci is coming off of, which is Goodfellas. And I don't see this movie, you know, hitting the heights. I don't see it being a Hall of Famer without him. DeVito and Lovitz, it's probably a little different of a movie. I feel like they could both do it in some sense.
Yeah. Here's the thing and why Pesci's perfect for it. like you said, he's coming off of Goodfellas. He's got that swag. He's so believable in kind of just the New York, you know, maybe he's not a mobster in this, but you know, he knows he's got some mob affiliations. Like he's got a buddy who's, you know, dabbles.
He knows some guys.
Yeah. He's street smart is probably a good way to put it. So yeah, Pesci's perfect. Lovitz, it's hard for me to take Lovitz seriously. I always picture him as like the rival wedding singer in the Wedding Singer. Danny DeVito, maybe, but I have trouble like disassociating him from Always Sunny.
Yeah, the last IMDb thing I've got, and there's a ton of IMDb trivia on this movie for anyone wanting to go see, but I just kind of pulled some interesting one. It's another casting thing. Lorraine Bracco was the first choice for the role of Mona Lisa Vito, but declined the role. You might know her as Karen from Goodfellas and Dr. Melfi from The Sopranos. Dave, you're a Sopranos guy, if I remember correctly.
Hey, more like Dr. Melfi. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, David. And yeah, no, we're actually, I'm a first-time Sopranos watcher right now. We just started season 4. It was long been a pop culture black hole for me. It was very cool to see Lorraine Bracco in there. I didn't realize she was in The Sopranos. She's iconic as Ray Liotta's wife in Goodfellas. I will say My Cousin Vinny is not as good without Marissa Tomei, because as we will get into, Marissa Tomei is a fucking first ballot Hall of Famer in this movie.
I can't say enough good things about her.
I take pretty copious notes for this podcast. And I was trying to just type out how I feel about this Tomei performance, and it is just it's nearly too good for words. It is fantastic. I tweeted from the Big Screen Sports Twitter account, that is @big_screensport, for anyone wondering, saying that if they don't have the Oscars in 2021, they should just give Marissa Tomei all the Oscars because she's fantastic.
Did she won for this, right?
She did. So there's a bit of IMDb trivia. I didn't copy it down. It's basically, there's a rumor that the presenter who was old, kind of like Warren Beatty was old when he made the La La Land Moonlight mix up. There's a rumor that like an urban legend that he read the wrong name for Tomei. And I'm not going to give any credence to that rumor. One, because people have said that it is false. I didn't see any of the other performances. Any of the other movies of the actresses nominated, but I don't see how she couldn't have won the Oscars. Just the best fucking performance ever.
She's an Oscar winner in my book either way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to get into more Marissa Tomei talk. Let's roll into best scene. I am trying to be more selective after last month's non-sports movie where I pretty much picked every scene in the movie in Swingers. All right, first scene up. Vinny's intro in prison with Stan. It is he's got some great quotes. He talks about the simple in and out procedure. It's either me or them, and you're getting fucked one way or the other. The prison rape joke has been done a million times in a million movies. Most of the time it's really heavy handed or just like comes off super tasteless. This one is perfect. It's just probably like, it makes me laugh. I've seen it a million times. It makes me laugh every time.
What's wrong with you? I don't want to do this. But I understand, but, you know, what are your alternatives?
My alternatives?
Yeah.
To what, to you? I don't know. Suicide? Death?
Look, it's either me or them. You're getting fucked one way or the other. Hey. Lighten up, okay? Don't worry, I'm gonna help you.
Gee, thanks.
Excuse me, but I think a modicum of gratitude would not be out of line here.
You think I should be grateful?
Yeah. I mean, it's your ass, not mine. I think you should be grateful. I think you should be down on your fucking knees.
It is truly the most tasteful prison rape joke, Kyle. I will say.
Absolutely. We can crown that.
I forgot about it. Just because I feel like the last 5 times I've watched this movie, it's been on like TNT or something, and I turn it on about 2/3 of the way. But yeah, that was a good scene. Well acted. Stan really sold it.
I'll get into this later, but the lack of a big time career for this after this for Stan is really really disappointing to me. The next one I've got, and again, I am trying to be more selective, so I'm passing up a lot of stuff. So if I miss one of your favorites, by all means, holler. The first courtroom scene, I don't know the actual courtroom term, but it's the first time he's in the court, and the judge just completely like dresses down Vinny in just some excellent baritone Southern, tells Vinny how to dress, how to act, ends up sending him to jail for the first time. It is a wonderful introduction to the judge Vinny relationship that is going to be a driving force in this movie.
Yes. You know, Vinny's basic fundamental misunderstandings or lack of knowledge of the basic courtroom procedures. I feel like anybody who's seen like two episodes of Law and Order could have done a better job. A simple not guilty plea would have sufficed, as he would find out. But yeah, that was that ended up being a great scene because that dynamic is so perfect. And it's probably the hot. Well, I won't say it's the highlight of the movie, but it's just one of many really, really good things about it.
Yeah, the great thing about this movie, and the reason that I think the ABA Journal ranked it number 3 on the list of 25 greatest legal movies, is that all the courtroom scenes are really, really good. They're really fun to watch, which is why the next scene I have up is the first day of trial, where Vinny shows up in the outrageous shirt. The first day of the actual trial, it's the first time. It's the opening arguments where he gets the everything that guy said is bullshit. Stan's public defender does the stuttering, but then Vinny gets into the witness about the grits, which is just excellent work. It's a flawless scene, flawless interrogation, and I now love saying no self-respecting Southerner uses instant grits is my favorite.
Do you remember what you had?
Eggs and grits.
Eggs and grits. I like grits too. How do you cook your grits? You like them regular, creamy, or al dente?
Just regular, I guess.
Regular. Instant grits?
No self-respecting Southerner uses instant grits. I take pride in my grits.
So, Mr. Tipton, how could it take you 5 minutes to cook your grits when it takes the entire grit-eating world 20 minutes?
That was really good. I love it. Are you?
You
grits
also
guy?
Get two Utes in that one. I am a grits guy, actually. I can do sweet or savory grits. Honestly, are you a grits guy?
On occasion, I will never make them, just because it just growing up, we never did them at home. But you know, I'm a big fan of kind of the alternative order at a nice restaurant. Maybe the shrimp and grits. I think that's a East Coast, Deep South cuisine. But yeah, grits are good. I always like them when I have them.
Yeah, so we recently, not so recently, a couple months ago, we did, it was one of those home meal delivery kits. No free ads, I'm not going to name which one, but they did, it was a shrimp and cheddar grits, and it was fantastic. And then I've replicated it myself, and it's really good. And then I'll also, every now and then, because we've just got a big ass box of grits, because grits apparently last forever. And I'll do like a sweet grits for breakfast sometime. Like put a little jam in them, and it's a nice little weekend side. But yeah, this is a big. This movie is like peak season for grits. This is probably the biggest moment in cinema history for grits, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes, and I hope I'm not scooping you on this, but the diner scene when they actually try grits for the first time, and they're just utter disgust, and like, you know, what the hell is this? Like, the reason I had never tried grits growing up, my mom is from the Northeast. She is from New York, and she's also Italian, and grits were never even mentioned. I didn't know what a grit was until I saw this movie, and I still don't really know what it is. It's corn, right? Whatever.
Yeah, it's corn. This I believe in the diner scene you're referencing, the beginning, the chef, the guy behind the counter, says them hominy grits, and I believe that is a type of corn. But I love that diner scene, just the menu being breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Dude, that menu is money.
I mean, you have to know, like, I was gonna ask you this: the food at that diner is probably good as shit. It's probably gonna clog your arteries, but it's probably really good.
That breakfast he whipped up looked fantastic. You know that they had a chicken fried steak on that menu that was just bomb. And the prices were just so perfect.
Yeah, I would love to eat at that diner. Sign me up. That first day of trial, it ends with Vinny getting some sleep in prison, which is really great, because Vinny's been struggling to get that sleep the whole time, and he finally gets it in the loud, seemingly violent prison. The last scene that I've got for best scene, and I'm gonna spoil my pick. This is absolutely my winner. It's Mona Lisa Vito's testimony. It is simply one of the most iconic courtroom scenes ever. It's up there with A Few Good Men, Kramer versus Kramer. You're just watching Tomei win an Oscar. It's kind of like, it's like Lob City. Pesci is just throwing it up and Tomei's flushing it. It's just, it is a perfect, perfect scene in this movie.
I find it hard to believe that this kind of information could be ascertained simply by looking at a picture.
Would you like me to explain?
I would love to hear this.
So would I.
The car that made these two equal length tire marks had pos attraction. Can't make those marks without pos attraction, which was not available on the 64 Buick Skylark.
And why not? What is pos attraction?
It's a limited slip differential which distributes power equally to both the right and left tires. The 64 Skylark had a regular differential, which anyone who's been stuck in the mud in Alabama knows. You step on the gas, one tire spins, the other tire does nothing.
It is. It's so good. Their dynamic is so good. When Joe, or I guess Vinny, plops himself up on the table, just kind of letting her go, and just his reactions to her as she's just, you know, spitting knowledge. It's so great.
I love when she talks about getting stuck in the mud in Alabama. It's a great callback. And then Vinny is on fire. Like, it's Vinny's a confident guy for a majority of the movie. Vinny is not a guy who's hurting for any sort of self-confidence, but he's just on fire. He's raining threes. He calls the sheriff to the stand right away, or he calls the other witness to get him to contradict a statement or whatever. You know, basically he calls the sheriff in. It is a perfect scene. It's something that, like, if the movie is on TV and we're within an hour of Mona Lisa Vito's testimony, I'm probably locking in. I'm probably breaking plans. I'm probably making sure that I'm around my TV. It is that good. I will wait out that hour with the commercials.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad you didn't gloss over the when he calls George Wilbur, I think, the expert witness, back up there, because that's just such a great part of it. Really drives it home. Also, fun fact, he was Carrie's dad in Homeland, and also the Jesus Focker guy from Meet the Parents.
Oh God, was that him?
It's only a game, Focker.
He is he's in Head of State as well, which is the movie where Chris Rock becomes, I guess, spoiler alert, the first black president. And it is that I'm very fond of that movie, starting from the beginning where Nate Dogg is singing over the opening credits. I really enjoy that movie, really enjoy the work of Chris Rock, and that guy is in it. Dave, if you had to pick a best scene in this movie, What's the pick for you? I feel like in this one, it's pretty obvious.
Well, let me tell you this. I'm going to give you two and I'm going to pick one. Two favorite scenes. My first one is when he is cross-examining Sam Tipton. Like you mentioned, the grit scene.
The grit scene.
That's
the grit
when
scene.
You realize, like, oh, okay, he's got a little bit of sauce too. Okay, I see Vinny. He's not completely worthless. But my favorite scene is when he is in the pool hall to go get the money, the $200 from JT, who refused to pay Mona Lisa in a game of pool after losing to her. When he goes in there and he's just like outclassing this guy in a back and forth while the entire pool hall laughs at him. That might be my favorite scene.
You and Lisa played a game of pool for $200, which she won. I'm here to collect.
How about if I just kick your ass?
Oh, a counteroffer. That's what we lawyers, I'm a lawyer, we lawyers call that a counteroffer. Let me see. This is a tough decision you give me here. Get my ass kicked to collect $200. What do you think? I could use a good ass kick, and I'll be very honest with you.
Nah, I think I'll just go with the 200.
Over my dead body.
You like to renegotiate as you go along, huh? Okay, then here's my counteroffer. Do I have to kill you? What if I was just to kick the ever-loving shit out of you?
That is a deep cut favorite scene, because that's not something that gets brought up a lot with My Cousin Vinny, because the JT stuff is great. That running gag, I think you run into him three times. I think there's that one, the time where he comes back, says he has the money, doesn't have all of the money, then he comes back with all the money, and Vinny just, Joe Pesci just drops his ass.
Dude, that's one of the funnier cinema fights you'll ever see. It's just like the weirdest, he doesn't even punch him. He just does like a perpendicular body splash. Like,
Joe,
I don't even
Pesci
know what that move
stands,
is.
Pesci, who stands at like 5'4". We have a listener question on that one here in a bit. My favorite scene is the Mona Lisa testimony. It's legitimately one of my favorite scenes ever in movies. I cannot get enough of it. It is so much so that I will watch that scene on YouTube sometimes if I just need to feel happy.
It's great, dude. It's perfect. It probably won her. I mean, it definitely won her the Academy Award, right?
Yeah. The thing is, if you haven't seen this movie in a while, you think of that. You think of her like they're you think of her winning the Oscar, and you're like, oh, it's because of that scene. And that's right. That's like that slam dunk gets her it. But she's on fire the whole movie, which we're gonna get into.
A lot of people think that they gave it to her also just because of the fire fits she was getting off.
She was getting off. I would love, we need to talk to another Wash podcaster, Barrett Dudley, about the fits that Mona Lisa's rocking. Dave, let's take a quick ad break, and then we'll get back with best quote. Big Screen Sports is brought to you by Deal Dash. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you never expect at a price you never believe. You need this in 2020. You need a win, honestly. We all need a win. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0, only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone has 10 seconds to answer, the item is yours. This is a chance to get something, scoop something at a massive discount. If you go ahead and sign up now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use the offer code BIGSCREEN or DealDash.fm/BIGSCREEN. That's DealDash.fm/BIGSCREEN. Big Screen Sports is also brought to you by our old friends at BetOnline.ag. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. For me, guys, that means the Minnesota Twins, who, on the day of recording this, kicked absolute ass against the White Sox today. It was great. I wish I had bet on it with BetOnline.ag, but I did not get my play in time. But no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partner, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, features, and prop bets to bet on available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry, famous for playing for those Spurs. See what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they are calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. And remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. All right, we're back. Best quote for this one. For comedy movies, it's tough to separate like an actual really good quote with just like a funny joke. I don't like just straight up repeating funny jokes. Is there something that stands out for you as the best quote from this movie? Something that you think of when you think My Cousin Vinny? Is there a certain line that stands out for you?
Oh, wow. This is tough. So when he is, when he has the older woman with the glasses, Constance on the stand, and he is, you know, questioning the validity of her eyesight, and he backpedals with the tape measure, goes all the way to the back of the courtroom and he asks how many fingers I'm holding up. And Judge Chamberlain goes, let the record show that he is holding up two fingers, you know? when Joe Pesci goes, you know, when he realizes what he's done, and then Vinny says it again, and he's like, and he's adamant that only she answer him, and they kind of show Judge Chamberlain, and it's very subtle, but it's just kind of, it's funny, because, you know, he's really pushing it. He's already on thin ice with this judge, and the judge just kind of knows he fucked up. So I thought it was a pretty underrated scene, and that kind of, you know, that further turns the tide in the defense's case.
How many fingers am I holding up?
Let the record show that counsel is holding up two fingers.
Your Honor, please, huh?
Oh. Sorry.
Now, Mrs. Riley, and only Mrs. Riley, how many fingers am I holding up now?
Yeah, it's when Vinny's still rolling with that confidence. It's another one of those confidence quips. I had a couple kind of written down. Two Utes. I don't know if that's like the two Utes. I don't know if that's a best quote. It just felt weird not to write it down, not to include.
You gotta mention it.
Yeah. Vinny's his opening statement, where he goes, everything that guy just said is bullshit. Thank you. Dave, if you were in law school, how would that go over if you suggested that be an opening statement?
Oh man, that's tough, dude. I feel like that's going to get you in a little bit of hot water with the judge. That violates local rules there.
Yeah. Yeah. The last thing I had written down for quote was, and it's a Mona Lisa Vito quote from my favorite scene, when she says, I'm going to do the impression because I'm probably just going to add in the audio over my voice, when she says,
"No, the defense is wrong."
And wrong has like eight vowels in it. And Vito and Vinny, who knows what, you know, she's finally picking up what Vinny's putting down. He's like, "Are you sure?" And then she's picking it up. She says, "I'm positive." That's my favorite little exchange, because that's the callback to when they're talking about the law books back at whatever shitty motel they're staying at.
That's great. I just thought of one more.
Oh, hit me with it.
It's from the great Lane Smith. I'm sure you'll be telling us where else we know him from. Jim Trotter, the DA, when he just hits the jury with a identical. That is, I've quoted that so many times. We walk around the house here in the Ruff household quoting it, just saying identical to each other. I love it. He's perfect for that role too, man.
He's great.
There's so many, the casting in this is perfect. Even though it's not a ton of huge names, the ones that they got, like, there's not a weak link in the mix.
Everyone eats up their scenes really well. There's not a single tough performance, and the casting is good because it's a lot of those kind of bit players. Like you see a lot of the cast pop up in other stuff. Like you rarely see, like, there's never been a movie that's like, oh, this is a Lane Smith vehicle. Like, at least in, you know, the last, you know, couple decades of his career. Same with Bruce McGill, who plays Sheriff Farley. Like, he's fucking good in everything, but there's never been a movie that, like, I'm going to see this movie because of Bruce McGill. It's just, if he's in it, he ups the movie. But as far as quotes go, oh, go ahead.
This movie has shades of the 2011 Dallas Mavericks, their NBA champions, 1-6 over the Miami Heat. You've got just guys playing their role. And you got a star, you got Dirk, you got Joe Pesci, but you got Marissa Tomei, who's right there with them. Maybe the J Kidd or the Jason Terry, 1A, 1B, you know, your second option. And you got Shawn Marion, and that's as far as the sports analogy is going to go.
I had to ask, though, who's Tyson Chandler? Who's crashing the boards in this movie?
Dude, it's Judge Chamberlain all day.
Well, he's a tall dude, too, especially.
He's also
especially
like 6'8".
Yeah, he's. I mean, he is. He was Herman Munster, that guy, Fred Gwynne. So
yeah,
he's literally like the Tyson Chandler of old 60s sitcoms. Dave, do you have a best quote in this one? Can you nail down your favorite line from this one?
Oh man, I kind of blew it on the identical thing, because I have to say that that entire scene is one of my favorites also.
I think that's a very good, like, I think that kind of sums up this movie really well, though, in that, like, your favorite line is more of a quip, or it's more of just something you can repeat, because that's a lot of what this movie is. This movie is, you know, funny random lines. Like, even the one he says to Stan in prison when he's like, it's a simple in and out procedure. It's just stuff like that. It's never, this isn't for a law movie. It is not monologue-y. There's no, you can't handle the truth or something intense like that. Right. It's just like funny quips that you can just use in day-to-day life to be funny.
I enjoyed when he thinks he's getting busted by the judge, you know, for the second time for not being a practicing attorney in New York or whatever, and he's like, "Wait, did you say Joey Gallo?" He goes, "It's Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo's dead." I love that interaction, because, like, obviously me as a noted Ranger fan, you've got Joey Gallo, the future of the franchise, and I always think of that scene whenever he's up there just hitting dingers.
Dave, let it be known that I believe that Vinny says Jerry Gallo, and
Jerry
then it's Jerry Gallo, but within the same 3-minute period, you have mentioned the Mavs 2011 title team and Joey Gallo. So we are a Dallas Cowboys reference away from the DFW trifecta.
Well, let me tell you this, and why I made that error, which I do regret for the record. Joe Gallo was an actual New York City mobster. They called him Crazy Joe. This is true. He was from the Colombo crime family. And he did die. He died in the 70s. But there's a lot of stuff on him. So I think that the Gallo name might be, you know, his last name in the movie, Vinny Gambini. You've got the Gambino crime family. You got Jerry Gallo, Joe Gallo. There's some nods to the mob in this. There's whoever did these names in the writing, they knew what they were doing.
Vinny Gambini is just the perfect, like, kind of sleazy, street smart New York lawyer name. And speaking of law, let's get into the most authentic, least authentic aspects of this film. It's not as easy to pick out something that's super authentic in a non-sports movie, because, like, a non-sports movie, you can tell if someone knows how to throw a baseball or not. But Dave, this is where I need you. This is where you need to be my Dirk. What is the most authentic part of this movie, especially when it comes to law?
Probably the scathing rebuke of our current criminal justice system, and how the deck is often stacked against defendants, especially those without the financial capabilities to obtain counsel. And maybe they have to go to the public defender who, you know, there's a lot of great attorneys in public defender's offices, but they're overworked, often understaffed, underpaid. So, you know, on like a meta level, it's that. And, you know, he's relying on his, a family member to come down and save him. But, like, what happens if that doesn't happen? What if he's stuck with the PD? What if they're stuck with the public defender? A guy who, you know, he goes up there and bombs. Like, then you got two innocent guys in jail, probably facing the electric chair, the often referenced electric chair in this movie. So I hate to get meta on you, Kyle, but I had to.
Well, and 99% of the time, getting your cousin Vinny to represent you doesn't work out. In reality, it doesn't work out. It's not going to go well for Bill and Stan. What was authentic to me, I couldn't pick out any law authenticity. I did not go to law school. I majored in marketing. I didn't really learn anything. But the most authentic thing to me was just the fish out of waterness of a New Yorker being dropped into the South, and a lot of it wasn't a lampooning as much as something like Talladega Nights is, which I covered recently. It was more just like Vinny just roughed up, like he ran up against some Southern customs that are fairly familiar if you've grown up in the South, and just stuff that Vinny would have no idea about. Stuff like the food, like grits, or how a deeply Southern judge keeps his court, that sort of thing. I found that very, very, the movie did the fish out of water thing very authentically without being a souped up lampoon like a Talladega Nights.
stuck in the mud.
Stuck in the mud, the Alabama mud.
Yeah, that I think you're right about that. Because yeah, there's times where I you know, in the past I've thought like, oh man, this is just making Southerners look like morons. But if you really watch it objectively, it's like, you know, it's kind of more about them kind of learning the custom and using it to their advantage. And you know, for what it's worth, like Vinny looked like a moron a lot in this movie too. So it wasn't like he just came down and dominated. But yeah, you know, one other thing that's pretty authentic from a legal standpoint, at one point Mona Lisa, she says something, she responds to him like, didn't they teach you that in law school? And he's like, no, they teach you contracts in law school and they don't teach you how to practice law. And that's absolutely true. The majority of law school is theory. Like he says, theory and interpretation. It's not courtroom behavior and just how to, you know, get somebody, you know, build a case, build an argument. So that was dead on.
The thing you mentioned about them, like they don't make the Southern people kind of look like idiots. In clumsier writing hands, they probably would make this movie like that. Like have, you know, the case be really stupid and have Bill and Stan actually getting railroaded. But like to the sheriff's credit and the town's credit and the prosecutor's credit, it was a very strange coincidence that two guys with a similar vehicle, similar description, murdered that clerk, you know, a minute or two after they did. It is very much an easily mistaken identity. Like you can very much see where they would have been the guys. They are very lucky that that Vinny was able to figure that out, because they should have really been pegged for murder. The least authentic thing that I'm gonna jump you on this is that kind of like what I said, hiring your cousin Vinny would not work out like that. Your cousin Vinny, who'd failed the bar six times, hadn't worked in a law office. I think Stan and Bill fry really quickly.
yeah, probably. I'm laughing, you know, but it's funny because it's true. Yeah, I think you're right about that. You know, for me, least authentic, I would say kind of how Vinny is utterly unfamiliar with the discovery process. And, you know, seeing the DA's files and his witness list and whatnot, like, you know, he thought that he was pulling one over on him by getting it. Like he finagled the guy. It's like, no, I mean, that's one thing you know about, like, even if you don't do trial law, you're familiar with, like, you get to see what the other side has. Like, that's just basic stuff.
I mean, Mona Lisa knows that.
Yeah. Mona Lisa knew. She's the alpha in this.
She really, that's a good take. Mona Lisa is really the alpha. Dave, would they have tried both of them together? They would have separate trials, would they not?
Yeah, I believe so, because they're tried for different things. So you're going to have to put on two different cases. So yeah, I'm going to be honest. I was never really a criminal attorney, but, I believe that would be the case. And I'm certainly not familiar with Alabama law, but, yeah, I think that would be very unlikely, because they were charging Stan with, you know, being an accessory, and obviously, what's his name? Jimmy with, murder.
That'd be Bill. I don't know where you got Jimmy from.
Jimmy? I don't know. It's a gangster name.
That'd be like if they charged Cato Kalin along with OJ, like if they were on the same in the same courtroom. We have for least authentic, we have a listener question from Ryan Yeager in the Big Screen Sports Facebook group. And it's kind of something we touched on earlier. Would Vinny really be able to knock that guy out with one punch? He was giving up like 2 feet to that guy. I asked that to you, Dave.
He didn't even punch him. Dude, I think what happened was he knocked him down. I think that JT hit his head on the concrete, which is very dangerous. And I think that's what happened, because it wasn't a punch. It was just like this body splash move that you really only see in like early 90s WWF.
He threw himself at him like he was a fucking salmon jumping out of water. It's like slapping his body against him.
Have you ever seen that video of the dude on the paddleboard in the school of dolphin, like swim up, like, and they just, that one just jumps up and smokes him? It's that.
And shout out to the guy who played JT. That guy is Chris Ellis, who has great bit parts in That Thing You Do, which I've covered on this podcast, and also Catch Me If You Can. He's another one of these great bit guys. But let's roll into what worked about this one, what was enjoyable, what was realistic, what just made this one into a Hall of Fame movie. Right off the bat, it is Pesci and Tomei at a Hall of Fame level.
Absolutely. I mean, they have chemistry. Even though Joe Pesci is not in her league, it still works. It's still believable that they would end up together, right? Because he's got the little man confidence. He's got the personality and he's got the charisma. So yeah, dude, it's their back and forth that make this movie.
Like, you should be grossed out by the age gap, and you're not. So when this movie was released, Pesci was 49, Marissa Tomei was 27. And the scene where they're at, like, the cabin, and she's going on and on about her biological clock. She mentions that they agreed to get married as soon as he won his first case, and it's been 10 years since that. How old do you think they're supposed to be? Like, what makes you sit well? Because, like, the chemistry, again, you don't really think about it that they shouldn't be together because they match up really good. I mean, it's okay. The chemistry is killer. What do you think? What do you think the ages should actually be for you to sleep well at night after watching this one?
Okay, well, let me just say this, or let me think about it. So Joe Pesci sat for the bar 6 times before he passed. I should say Vinny sat for the bar. So you have to, and, you know, law school is generally a 3-year deal. So he did undergrad till he was, let's say, 22. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Did law school till he was 25. They offer the bar, I don't know about New York, but in Texas, it's probably the same. Twice a year is when it's offered. So at least 3 years of not passing the bar. So, I mean, he's should be around 30. And I will even say I would believe 39 because everybody in the 90s kind of looks way shittier. And Marissa Tomei, I mean, it's hard to tell, man. I think that what did you say? She was actually 27 in this. Mona Lisa.
She was 27.
You could have told me Mona Lisa was 25. You could have told me she was 32 and I would have believed it.
Yeah. See, I think Vinny is about, like, for the sake of this movie, I think Vinny's 40, just a guy who hasn't aged great, probably smoked a ton of cigarettes in the 70s and the 80s. You know, guys live pretty hard, a little fast and loose. And then Mona Lisa, she's like you said, she's 32. She's just aging like a fine wine. When she's 40, she's still going to look great. You know why? Because however old Marissa Tomei is, she looks fantastic. She is a first ballot Hall of Famer. But you don't really think about it at all in the movie. You're like, yeah, they're together. Their chemistry works perfect. Like, it's fantastic. You know, the movie does a really good job of making you care enough about Bill and Stan, because Pesci and Tomei don't show up. Vinny and Mona Lisa don't show up until like 10 minutes into the movie. So it does this really good job of making you care about Bill and Stan. And then it's like, okay, they're in jail, they're on trial. Now let's let Pesci and Tomei drive this one out.
Yeah. It's pretty remarkable. And like, I'm looking at the cast list as we do this and I'm like, dude, there's so many good performances in this. And like, his dynamic with the DA, Jim Trotter, who, let's be honest, like, there's not really a straight up bad guy in this movie. Cause like, there's nobody that you're rooting obviously against the state and it's sometimes the judge, but like, even like Jim Trotter, you know, he was over the top and he was kind of corny to the jury, but like, he was kind of likable. He was just doing his job. Like, he wasn't overly bad. And then his back and forth with Vinny was so good.
And you don't blame him for trying to prosecute the case, because it all adds up when you think about who actually did it. It is, I mean, again, what are the chances?
It's completely conceivable why they would try to pursue a case against these two. Like, it makes all the sense. They probably thought this would be a open and shut deal, and you know, it almost was.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Trotter, you mentioned, you know, everyone who gets a shot in this movie, like gets some speaking lines, just shines. All four witness interactions plus Mona Lisa's are just excellent. The Gritz guy is played by Maury Chaykin. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. He is well known for his Entourage cameo as Harvey Weingard, who was inspired by the notoriously now currently imprisoned Harvey Weinstein. But he's great as the Grits guy. Same with the guy who is the Ernie Crane, who is the guy with the gunked up windows. He's played by Rainer Sheen. Rainer Sheen is also in The Rookie, which I had your co-host Dylan Shivery on to cover. He's another bit player who you know does what he can do. Bruce McGill is Sheriff Farley, like I talked about. He's good in everything. He's good in that scene where he's interrogating Bill at first, and then you shot the clerk, and then Ralph Macchio is just with the I shot the clerk. It's an excellent scene.
Yeah. Do you know where Trotter, what else Trotter was in?
Trotter was in a movie that you and I covered on this podcast.
Okay. I'm glad. Okay. Just making sure you recognized the Hawk when you saw him.
You didn't think I would let Coach Riley slip out of my sights. The coach from the Mighty Ducks. The funny thing is he's trying to prosecute two likable characters for a murder they didn't commit in this movie. And he's much more likable than he is in the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, 100%. And he's got to be the guy who's most confused for Tommy Lee Jones in Hollywood.
100%. This movie, the courtroom scenes in this movie, just another shout out to Fred Gwynn as Judge Chamberlain. He is like the tall, he's the perfect commanding figure as the judge with that deep baritone voice. He carves a very strong figure. It's just a perfect casting. It's just perfect casting all around in this movie. And it's kind of like an obvious thing to say for really good movies, but really good movies are, you cast them perfectly. And this one does that. This one is also aged really well, which you think like comedy from 1992, you don't really expect that. And it is actually like pretty, there's not really a whole lot to write home about if you're in like the 2020 cancel culture crowd.
No, I really can't think of anything. Maybe the prison scene, that we referenced earlier, it's just a tasteful comedy, man. It's very well done. And I got to say, more on the judge. You know how I describe him as tough but fair, Kyle. Tough but fair.
Tough but fair. Is that the mark of a good judge?
That's the mark of a good judge, man. You're like, oh, is this guy going to be the bad guy? You're like, he's not. He's just by the book, dude. He's old school.
I think one of the best parts about this movie is that you just don't think at any time that they're not getting off. You feel very relaxed in that sense. It's more of an adventure of how Vinny is going to somehow win this case versus like, oh, Bill and Stan might go to the electric chair.
yeah, absolutely. We haven't even mentioned really Billy, the great Ralph Macchio.
Well, so let's kind of go into what didn't work, because there's not a lot for this movie, but it's tough sledding for Macchio and Whitfield. Is it Macchio or Macchio? Because when I did Karate Kid, I pronounced it the wrong way for the first half of the movie, and now I can't remember how that was.
Here's the deal, and this I believe I'm right about this, even though I haven't spoke Italian since college. It's technically Macchio, but I believe in American pop culture, he's Ralph Macchio. That's how you'll hear it, but the C-H-I, or just the C-H, is more of a chi instead of a chi. I could be wrong about that. Feel free at D. Carter Ruff on Twitter and Snap to tell me I'm wrong. But
that's the kind of expertise we need in this pod. We need the Italian language expertise. But as far as Macchio, especially Macchio, like Mitchell Whitfield, who plays Stan Rothstein, I think he is great in this movie, or Stan Rothenstein. I think he's great in this movie. He never really, like, this is his moment. He's best known for this and Friends appearances as Dr. Barry Farber. He is the, I believe that is who Jennifer Aniston, who Rachel runs out on in the first episode of Friends. But Macchio is an 80s icon. And then after this has a long drought for really like anything good. And I think a lot of that, and this is something that I can really empathize with, he's 31 when this movie comes out. He does not look his age, not even close. I am right in that ballpark. And I think for a long time, it was really tough for him to get roles.
And didn't they do a Karate Kid reboot recently?
I don't even know if he was a part of that. Yeah, so he goes on this long drought. I mean, he still works kind of consistently, but nothing's great. He is in Beer League, which came out in 2006 with Artie Lang. It's got a 27% on Rotten Tomatoes. Beer League has 100% in my heart. I love Beer League so deeply. It is a movie about a slow pitch softball league.
I love anything with Artie Lang.
Dave, you would love Beer League. It's got a lot of names in it. Have you done it on here? I have not done it on here. If you want to go watch Beer League tomorrow, we can record a pod on this.
I don't want to tell you how to do your podcast, but dude, I got it. I don't even know about this movie, and it's got freaking Ralph Macchio and Artie Lang.
Man, so Beer League is like, I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent here, but Beer League is obviously a movie that the critics are going to hate, but it is really good. It's got some names in it. It's got Joe Latrullio, who is, you might know him as the guy, I think he's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but he's the guy in Superbad who hits Jonah Hill with his car.
Oh, okay.
It's got some random folks in it that you'll recognize. And it's co-written by Artie Lang. But anyways, Macchio gets in that. That's not successful to anyone but me. So like for me in 2006, Ralph Macchio's back. For everyone else, he's still not. But then they have rebooted Karate Kid, Cobra Kai. And apparently I have not seen it. Apparently like, they did the first two seasons on YouTube. And I think like Netflix or Hulu or something has bought the third one. But apparently Cobra Kai is excellent. So I guess Ralph Macchio is finally back. But just tying that all into what didn't work about this movie, it's kind of sad to see that this is like Ralph Macchio's last big moment for a long time.
Dude, and he barely has any speaking parts. He's in the background for 90% of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, they make us care about Bill and Stan. They kind of give him something to cook with in the beginning of the movie. And then it's like, okay, you got to, you know, Marissa and Joe Pesci are here. They're going to drive. You guys are just going to sit there. You're going to get the occasional quip in. But by the end of the movie, you've almost forgotten about him.
Yeah, he's more of a game manager, you know. He's got, you know, he dishes it off to Pesci and Tomei. Kind of like, you know, some, you know, early Dak when he was just leaning on Zeke.
We've hit it, folks. Ring the DFW bell. We have hit all the we've hit the big three in DFW sports.
Yeah, I mean, this sports analogy doesn't really go much further than that, but that's what I'm thinking.
As far as what else didn't work, I don't know if this doesn't work, but Dave, I've just got to ask you: if someone takes six times to pass the bar, how do you size that person up with their law capability?
I think I know in Texas you're limited. I don't know if you can take it six times. I feel like they give you like four or maybe five and then you're done. But honestly, if I knew somebody took a long time to pass it, it does not mean they would not be a good attorney, because there are so many people who end up being the best attorneys, the most successful, that were terrible in law school. And yeah, maybe they barely pass the bar and they get by and become successful because of their personality, their charisma, not because they're the smartest, but because they're convincing. So, and that's exactly what Vinny was. Vinny wasn't, you know, he was street smart, like we've said, but he's a rule bender. He finds the loopholes, you can tell. So you can't sleep on those guys and girls who take a, you know, one or two times or six to pass.
So what's the future look like for Vinny then, you think? Because when he gets back to New York, I don't think he's going to get any murder cases based on, like, it wouldn't be on social media that he just won this murder case. What is Vinny's, like, what is the rest of his career kind of look like?
So here's how this goes down. Word's going to get out around his, whatever borough in New York City he lives in. I don't even know how it's, you know, wherever he's from. The Bronx. It's going to get out that he, you know, he went down there, went to Alabama, foreign turf, went to the deep South and saved two guys from the electric chair, basically. And word's going to get around to these mobsters, these, you know, these low-level street guys, and he is going to have a pretty nice book of business. He said he was doing personal injury before. Personal injury is one of those things where you only need to hit on one. You know, you get one, say it's a $5 million settlement. Well, if you're doing like a 20% commission or whatever it is, or whatever, I don't know what the fees are in New York, then you're sitting pretty. So I think his rep is going to get it. A huge boost from this. And also, dude, his confidence, which was already through the roof, has got to be on another level. So he's just going to walk into whatever courtroom and own it.
Vinny would make a great mob lawyer.
Absolutely.
You'd love to see him in that role. Did you have anything? Consigliere. Did you have anything that didn't work about this one? I've only got a couple nitpicky things, but it's a pretty perfect movie.
Okay. The one thing that I wanted, and I wonder if there's like a director's cut where this is the hunting scene. He goes hunting with the trotter, and they never really show it. They just show him in the truck, and they show them staying at the hunter's cabin, but they go hunting, right? And they don't get a deer, but like, I have to think that they had that shoot, and like, there was some funny, you know, Vinny, you know, walking around in hunting gear or like whatever, his pleated slacks holding a deer rifle. Like, I feel like there was some gold there.
This movie is 2 hours on the dot. I would absolutely be willing to see a 2.5 hour director's cut. I just want to see what's on the reel. I just want to see the extra stuff.
Absolutely.
I would pay, especially in quarantine, like in COVID season, I would pay a significant amount of money to see that actually. Like I had to pay $25 for fucking Scoob. So I would drop at least twice that for a director's cut of My Cousin Vinny. Now, the two things I had, kind of like the same thing with them being tried together. I feel like murder suspects don't get to room together in the slammer. I feel like they probably would have split that up. Wouldn't have wanted them chatting each other up. And then the sheriff runs the report on that Pontiac in very little time, especially for 1992.
Agree. I was kind of wondering that myself.
His secretary has to be a fucking stud, honestly. She is working that fax like a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and I feel like even though it was 1992, he would have gotten busted. I mean, like, it's just a phone call away to find out that this guy isn't who he says he is. Like, and I know there was some back and forth on that, and he switched the name up from Gallo to Callow. But I feel like he finagled his way in that one, and that wouldn't really go down like that.
Yeah, for as fast as the sheriff got the Pontiac records and the word of the two murderers being arrested, the exact opposite with Judge Chamberlain getting Vinny's records. Dave, the Kevin Costner and Freddie Prinze Jr. awards for best and worst on-screen job depiction. I mean, we're basically given Trotter as a prosecutor, Vinny as a lawyer, and then Judge Chamberlain as a judge. Who is the best? What's the best on-screen job? Who's the best at their job?
It's Judge Chamberlain for me. Honestly, he didn't have to do a lot, but like that is a small town. That is a small town judge who is all about decorum and procedure. Just a stickler. He nailed it. Like there are some things that Vinny gets. Like, you know, he nails. But like a lot of that stuff, like nobody, no matter if they took six times to pass the bar or not, like is going to try that in a courtroom.
On that note, cause I don't want to disparage, Pesci or Trotter with a worst on-screen job depiction award. Cause I think they both seem pretty good. Let's go into the Lenny Harris pinch hitter award for best supporting character. Here are my nominees. It's a pretty stacked field. Fred Gwynn is Judge Chamberlain, like you just said, he's great. Lane Smith is Jim Trotter, the DA, aka Coach Riley in the Mighty Ducks. Bruce McGill is Sheriff Riley. He is just a fantastic character. I enjoy Bruce McGill in absolutely everything. He's D-Day in Animal House. He's Walter Hagen in Bagger Vance, which is a movie that's a little problematic and just not good, but I still really like it, and I don't know why.
Dude, he is D-Day. I did not make that connection.
He's D-Day.
Oh my goodness.
He's also in one of the best underseen baseball movies of all time, 61. Have you seen 61, Dave?
I'm sorry to let you down. I have not.
It's an HBO movie. It stars Barry Pepper, Thomas Jane as Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle about the home run chase in 1961. And he's in that as the Yankees manager. He's great. Mitchell Whitfield is Stan Rothstein. He's legitimately funny in this one. He's very good. He holds his own around Joe Pesci, especially in that prison scene. Shame the guy didn't get more work. And then Marissa Tomei is Mona Lisa Vito, one of my favorite movie performances of all time. If you had to pick one, Dave, what's your pick?
Man, it's got to be Mona Lisa. I mean, I would be lying if I said it was anybody else. Like, I love Jim Trotter. I love Lane Smith's depiction of Jim Trotter. It's right there. But for me, she won an Oscar for this for a reason. She's so good. She ends up being like the key to the entire case. It's great. Her performance is bravo. She's great in The Wrestler. All the other stuff she's in. She's like 55. She looks 38. Just shout out to Mona Lisa.
Shout out to her. I mean, it's one of my favorite performances. She's like the last decade. She's like the last decade and change. I think The Wrestler was 08. She's just really hit her stride. I think she was nominated for The Wrestler. She's got another nomination under her belt too. She's in The Lincoln Lawyer, which is a like early beginning of the McConaissance movie. That's actually pretty good. Held up pretty well. She's Aunt May and Spider-Man. I'm sure that's a pretty handsome check she's cashing. And then recently in The King of Staten Island, and she still looks great. She's still great on screen, but Mona Lisa Vito is just one of my favorite characters ever. Can I say
something else that was authentic about this movie that has to do with Mona Lisa?
Absolutely.
So she was a hairdresser, an out-of-work hairdresser, but a hairdresser. She has that crazy little blonde or silver streak in her hair. And I feel like every hairdresser like does just experiments on their hair, or they experiment on each other's hair. And they're always like trying different colors and stuff. So that was like very accurate.
And somehow that streak on her with her character and her attitude is one of the hottest things I've ever seen in my life.
It makes no sense, but you're right.
Absolutely. Dave, let's get into my favorite category, the big chill, which isn't always there in a non-sports movie. I have one nominee for this one. It's Mona Lisa Vito's speech. You're just watching her win an Oscar.
In the 60s, there were only two other cars made in America that had positive traction and independent rear suspension and enough power to make these marks. One was the Corvette, which could never be confused with the Buick Skylark. The other had the same body length, height, width, weight, wheelbase, and wheel track as the 64 Skylark, and that was the 1963 Pontiac Tempest.
And because both cars were made by GM, were both cars available in metallic mint green paint?
They were.
Thank you, Ms. Vito. No more questions.
You're watching her win the case, chew up the screen, Pesci just feeding her, and then that kind of rolls into your boy Trotter saying the state would like to dismiss all charges. Is there anything else in this movie that kind of hits that note for you?
That's it, man. It's when she utters the word positraction, it's that. It's you know what's going down right there.
It's game over. It's the thing that when the movie's on cable, you've got to see it or your day is ruined. Like, there's nothing worse than having plans you can't break. And My Cousin Vinny's like 20 minutes away from getting to the scene and you have to leave your house. It is emotionally devastating.
Maybe honorable mention to when Vinny, you know, tells the nice old lady she might need some thicker glasses. Cause you're like, oh, that's one of the first, you know, one of the first couple parts where you're like, oh, he's competent. He's got a shot here. But yeah, no, it's definitely that scene that we just mentioned.
Absolutely. Dave, how would you improve this one, if at all?
Give us the hunting scene. Give it to us. I want to see those guys in a deer stand.
Someone's got that B-roll footage somewhere. Someone's got the director's cut. It's out there.
Yeah. I'm curious. I'm genuinely curious if that exists or not. I don't own this movie on DVD, so I can't go. I don't even know if that would be a thing.
It's a shame you didn't invest in the DVD, because those are wise investments. Those have
laser
panned disc. Out very well.
I was all in on Laserdisc, Kyle.
Ah, you didn't get the HD movies when when Xbox 360 came out, the HD movies.
Oh my God, don't even bring it up.
Incredible, incredible shit. Final category. Before More Restore, would you rather see a prequel, a sequel, or a remake, or none of the above for this movie? I'm in the none of the above camp. Don't touch it.
Definitely not a sequel. Prequel might be interesting. Get to see him grinding his way through law school. Or maybe while he's trying to pass the bar, all the odd jobs that he's doing to stay afloat. Maybe he's doing some like low level petty crimes or something. I don't know. Maybe not. But don't touch it. Yeah, don't touch it. And definitely, if you remake this, I will riot.
The problem is you can't do anything without Pesci as Vinny Gambini. It's too iconic a character. And like Marissa Tomei is still, like, she could still rock it. I don't think the Joe Pesci we saw in The Irishman, like, it would be funny to see a little skit of him, like, doing, you know, doing the Vinny Gambini thing. But I don't think we need to see Marissa Tomei, like, being married to a very old, stiff Vinny. Last bit of IMDb trivia. A sequel was discussed where Vinny Gambini would be practicing in Britain. Unfortunately, Marissa Tomei dropped out of the project. In subsequent attempts with another screenwriter to create a suitable story without her character went nowhere to the point where the proposed film was canceled. That would have been an interesting watch.
That sounds so bad. I get it's the, you know, taking him out of his comfort zone, putting him in a new culture. I can't believe that's serious. You're dead serious on that?
I pulled that off the IMDb. And like the bad thing is, you know, especially with how 90s movies worked, like especially 90s sequels, they would have pulled the same thing as Major League 2. It's like, all right, we're going to change one thing and then we're going to run it all back. We're going to run the same playbook. It's going to work perfectly, folks. And then it just doesn't work perfectly.
Didn't they do the Bad News Bears, like go to Japan or something?
Yeah, from my understanding, I've only seen the original Bad News Bears, but apparently the sequels like aren't terrible. There's something that I need to get on my radar. But like, you think about Major League 2, they basically did the exact same thing. And if you're doing that, unless you go super meta with it, like they did in 22 Jump Street, where they're very self-aware and like making jokes about how it's the same thing. I think most of that stuff just falls flat on his ass. And even if you got Pesci and Tomei, I feel like it just would have been overkill. They wouldn't have been surrounded by as much greatness as they were in this one.
Yeah. I'm so glad that sequel did not get made for all of their careers. That could have tanked Joe Pesci's career and Marissa Tomei's. Oh, it's shocking. And you know what else? There would have been no need for any of the other characters, the supporting characters, to be in this because they're in Britain. And I know I'm overthinking this, but I'm like, this would have been just devastating. This would have been so bad. Probably ruined my childhood.
It would have been terrible. But luckily, Dave, we were spared. We only have My Cousin Vinny in our lives, and that's the way things need to be. Thank you so much for returning to Big Screen Sports, talking this movie with me. Tell the folks again where they can find you, where they can catch out your podcast and your podcast network.
Check us out. We're Washed Media. You can listen to more of me if you want to on the Circling Back podcast. Check out all of our podcasts, Club Cool featuring Barrett Dudley, if you're into style and pop culture. So Many Screens, which we mentioned earlier with J.R. Hickey and Kate Patnod. And the Mail-In podcast with my one of my co-hosts on Circling Back, Dylan Shivery. And don't forget Sunday Scaries with Will DeFries, my third co-host on Circling Back. That's another great podcast. So check us out. Check us out there. And man, this was fun. I can't believe we went this long. I feel like I talked too much, man. I'm sorry.
No, I'm the one who talks too much, Dave. It was a thrill to have you back on this podcast. Love talking My Cousin Vinny with you. We're going to have to do Beer League very soon. I'm literally going to text you a link about Beer League as soon as we get off this pod. But if you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review. You folks know the drill. Also, for any baseball fans, check out my interview series From Phenom to the Farm, presented by Baseball America. That comes at you every other Tuesday. Upcoming episode with former big league reliever Carter Capps. It's a really good one, really interesting conversation. Guy who went from being a redshirt catcher at a Division II school to a top draft prospect, throws 100 miles an hour. Don't miss that one. But for now, we will catch you next Monday with Big Screen Sports. Thanks for listening.